Chapter 4 Plans and Plans.
Which of us began it first?
Neither.
It began of itself from the very first.
I have said that with sternness I brought her into the house. From the first step, however, I softened it. Before she was married, it was explained to her that she would have to take pledges and pay out money, and she said nothing at the time. Note that. What is more, she set to work with positive zeal. Well, of course, my lodgings, my furniture, all remained as before. My lodging consisted of two rooms, a large room from which the shop was partitioned off, and a second one, also large, our living room and bedroom. My furniture is scanty. Even her aunts had better things. My shrine of icons with the lamp was in the outer room where the shop is. In the inner room, my bookcase with a few books in, and a trunk of which I keep the key. Married, I told her that 1 ruble a day and not more was to be spent on our board, that is, on food for me, her, and Lucaria, whom I had enticed to come to us. I must have 30,000 in 3 years, said I, and we can't save the money if we spend more. She fell in with this, but I raised the sum by 30 kopecks a day. It was the same with the theatre. I told her before marriage that she would not go to the theatre, and yet I decided once a month to go to the theatre, and in a decent way, to the stalls. We went together. We went 3 times, and saw The Hunt After Happiness and Singing Birds, I believe. Oh, what does it matter? We went in silence, and in silence we returned. Why, from the very beginning, did we take to being silent? From the very first, you know, we had no quarrels, but always the same silence. She was always, I remember, watching me stealthily in those days. As soon as I noticed it, I became more silent than before. It is true that it was I insisted on the silence, not she. On her part, there were 1 or 2 outbursts. She rushed to embrace me. But as these outbursts were hysterical, painful, and I wanted secure happiness with respect from her, I received them coldly. And indeed I was right. Each time the outburst was followed next day by a quarrel. Though, again, there were no quarrels. But there was silence, and on her side, a more and more defiant air. Rebellion and independence, that's what it was, only she didn't know how to show it. Yes, that gentle creature was becoming more and more defiant. Would you believe it? I was becoming revolting to her. I learned that, and there could be no doubt that she was moved to frenzy at times. Think, for instance, of her beginning to sniff at our poverty, after her coming from such sordidness and destitution, from scrubbing the floors. You see, there was no poverty. There was frugality, but there was abundance of what was necessary, of linen, for instance, and the greatest cleanliness. I always used to dream that cleanliness in a husband attracts a wife. It was not our poverty she was scornful of, but my supposed miserliness in the housekeeping. He has his objects, she seemed to say. He is showing his strength of will. She suddenly refused to go to the theatre, and more often an ironical look, and I was more silent, more and more silent. I could not begin justifying myself, could I? What was at the bottom of all this was the pawnbroking business. Allow me, I knew that a woman, above all at 16, must be in complete subordination to a man. Women have no originality. That is an axiom. Even now, for me it is an axiom. What does it prove that she is lying there in the outer room? Truth is truth, and even Mill is no use against it. And a woman who loves, oh, a
woman who loves idealizes even the vices, even the villainies of the man she loves. He would not himself even succeed in finding such justification for his villainies as she will find for him. That is generous, but not original. It is the lack of originality alone that has been the ruin of women. And I repeat, what is the use of your point to that table? Why, what is there original in her being on that table? Oh! Listen, I was convinced of her love at that time. Why, she used to throw herself on my neck in those days. She loved me. That is, more accurately, she wanted to love. Yes, that's just what it was. She wanted to love. She was trying to love. And the point was that in this case there were no villainies for which she had to find justification. You will say, I'm a pawnbroker, and everyone says the same. But what if I am a pawnbroker? It follows that there must be reasons, since the most generous of men had become a pawnbroker. You see, gentlemen, there are ideas. That is, if one expresses some ideas, utters them in words, the effect is very stupid. The effect is to make one ashamed. For what reason? For no reason. Because we are all wretched creatures and cannot hear the truth, or I do not know why. I said just now, the most generous of men. That is absurd. And yet, that is how it was. It's the truth, that is, the absolute, absolute truth. Yes, I had the right to want to make myself secure and open that pawnbroker's shop. You have rejected me, you, people, I mean. You have cast me out with contemptuous silence. My passionate yearning towards you, you have met with insult all my life. Now I have the right to put up a wall against you, to save up that 30,000 rubles and end my life somewhere in the Crimea on the south coast, among the mountains and vineyards, on my own estate, bought with that 30,000. And above everything, far away from you all, living without malice against you, with an ideal in my soul, with a beloved woman at my heart, and a family if God sends one, and helping the inhabitants all around. Of course, it is quite right that I say this to myself now, but what could have been more stupid than describing all that aloud to her? That was the cause of my proud silence. That's why we sat in silence. For what could she have understood? 16 years old, the earliest youth. Yes, what could she have understood of my justification, of my sufferings? Undeviating straightness, ignorance of life, the cheap convictions of youth, the hen-like blindness of those noble hearts, and what stood for most was the pawnbroker's shop, and enough. And was I a villain in the pawnbroker's shop? Did she not see how I acted? Did I extort too much? Oh, how awful is truth on earth! That exquisite creature, that gentle spirit, that heaven, she was a tyrant. She was the insufferable tyrant and torture of my soul. I should be unfair to myself if I didn't say so. You imagine I didn't love her? Who can say that I did not love her? Do you see? It was a case of irony, the malignant irony of fate and nature. We were under a curse. The life of men in general is under a curse, mine in particular. Of course, I understand now that I made some mistake. Something went wrong. Everything was clear. My plan was clear as daylight. Austere and proud, asking for no moral comfort, but suffering in silence. And that was how it was. I was not lying.
I was not lying.
She will see for herself later on that it was heroic, only that she had not known how to see it, and when some day she divines it, she will prize me 10 times more, and will abase herself in the dust and hold her hands in homage. That was my plan. But I forgot something, or lost sight of it. There was something I failed to manage. But enough. Enough! And whose forgiveness am I to ask now? What is done is done. Be bolder, man, and have some pride. It is not your fault. Well, I will tell the truth. I am not afraid to tell the truth. It was her fault. Her fault.